The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. The ruler sneered at Jesus and said, "He saved others, let him save himself, if he is the chosen one, the Christ of God." Even the soldiers jeered at him. As they approached to offer him wine, they called out, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." Above him there was an inscription that read, "This is the King of the Jews." Now one of the criminals hanging there reviled Jesus, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." The other, however, rebuking him, said in reply, "Have you no fear of God? For you are subject to the same condemnation. And indeed we have been condemned justly, for the sentence we received corresponds to our crimes. But this man has done nothing criminal." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." He replied to him, "Amen, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." The Gospel of the Lord. Evangelii dicta de ante nos delecta. The solemnity of Christ the King, as I say in the bulletin article this week, is only less than 100 years old. And it was put into place as the nations, the old kingdoms and empires of Europe were crumbling after the First World War. And so Pope Pius XI wanted to set up a remembrance that Christ is King. This to remind people that even as a lot of nations moved away from monarchy as their form of government, that the universe is still a monarchy. And to remind them that really what happened, and we see that they're continuing to fall apart, right? You know, Europe has not learned its lesson in 100 years. They just more and more full steam. We need no king. And that infection has even come to our shores at times for a lot of people. Out with the old. Old way of thinking. Christ the King stands athwart that. Now, originally, Christ the King was celebrated at the end of October, and now we have it at the end of ordinary time. And the way it's presented at the end of ordinary time now, King of the Universe, it perhaps can give people the impression that it's more of a kind of the he's got the whole world in his hands sort of idea, right? Jesus Christ is Lord. Yes, he is. Okay, so Jesus Christ is the King of the Universe. He's Lord and Master, eternal victor, eternal Lord, eternal King, way out there, beyond the stars, out there in the ether, out there in heaven somewhere, beyond the universe, Christ is King. Doesn't that make you feel warm and fuzzy? But that's true, absolutely it's true, but that's not really the point of this celebration. Jesus Christ is an actual, literal king of the world. Even when they didn't live it out perfectly, the kings of history, Christian kings at least, understood that they had their power from God. That, especially ones that were, there were empires, right, there were kings who understood, well, I'm a king, sure, but there's an emperor over me. Well, even the emperor knew that above me is God. And that had practical effects. It wasn't this just sort of, again, vague abstract notion, Jesus Christ is King and Lord, somewhere out beyond the universe. No, it was this recognition that actually impacts the way you live day to day and the way you wield power day to day, and the way you, and the responsibilities you take on, recognizing that rights and power always, without exception, have responsibilities attached to them. that every dignity, every power, every mark of respect, every authority one might have, it's about the good of one and all. The good of each and the good of all. The individual and the common good. Not held in tension, but held together. Knowing that to violate one is to violate the other. And recognizing then that anything we on the human level do must always be in conformity with Jesus Christ, King of the universe, in a very literal and a very practical way. Philosophers and theologians thought about this and said, well, so what are the impacts on the most practical matters like human law, societal arrangements? What do we do there? Thomas Aquinas talked about this hierarchy of law. You have the eternal law, the nature of God himself, whose truth and goodness and beauty and justice himself. Eternal things that are true. Things do good, avoid evil. You may not do evil that good might result. The ends never justify the means, no matter how good the ends are. Basic fundamental things like that, things that are true in themselves without connection to any created thing, things that are just truths, axiomatic truths. Below those are the contingent laws of nature, not contingent as unchangeable, but contingent in that they don't have to be because the universe does not have to be. The natural law, the nature of things as they have been created and as they are. Those are always in conformity with the eternal law of God. They didn't have to exist, but since they exist, since they were created in a particular way, and their natures are not mutable. God would have to have made a different universe. So, what if natural law? What if, you know, the nature of something is this or that? I mean, that's what's so nefarious about all the gender nonsense, right? Is that you're claiming that the universe is different than it is because the male and female are created, and that's natural law. That's a feature of the universe. That's the gravitational constant, right? The gravitational constant could be different, I suppose, but then we would have a different universe. God could have made us with a variable or a different number of sexes, but he didn't. This is the universe we live in. And if you do not believe that, it is literally insane. Now you can trace back, okay, what pathology would lead someone to be that insane? Of course, you want to have compassion with people who are confused. But, and again, that's not the only thing in the world, it's just so poignant and so present all the time. But you can look at other things. So natural law, the nature of things. That, you know, human beings, right? We in our civil tradition, we have the Lockean rights of life, liberty, and property, right? Those things are, if the universe were different, I suppose those might look a little bit different, but the way in which this world does exist, human beings by their nature possess those rights. Now they have responsibility to use them as well. That's something that the Enlightenment, or they're so arrogant to call themselves the Enlightenment, throwing away the light of Christ so often, but they at least got that little bit right. But they, what they got wrong was realizing that all those rights have responsibilities attached to them. So natural law is nested beneath eternal law. And below that is our human law, how we arrange our societies. There is no eternal dictator feature of nature that says red octagons mean stop. We've decided that red octagons mean stop. But the purpose to them is for the good of the community, right? So we don't run into each other. And this is where the philosophers and the theologians examined it. They said, well, what about our human laws? They said, well, does every evil thing need to be made a crime? No. The natural law and the divine law are real laws. They already are enforced. Oftentimes they're enforced by nature. Right? Drink like a fish, you're going to pay. Pay, it's going to naturally take care of itself. Right? Sometimes it's arranged that, sometimes it's an internal thing, right? Some of these things that are self-same with the love of God, if you reject them, you reject the love of God and you go your own way. If that's not enough to motivate people, I don't know what might be. So not every human law needs to enforce a natural law or a divine law. But no human law can make good what is evil, or make evil what is good. So must every sin be a crime? No. Must every error be forcibly quashed by human authority? No. Can any error be positively promoted by human law? No. Can any evil be required? No. Indeed, it's to do so would be rebelling against Christ the King, and it would be to lose the authority one claims to have. Our society could make whatever laws we want, I suppose, or think we are making whatever laws we want, but the minute we positively permit something evil, that statute is not a law. It's a square circle. It's an idiot babbling against the wind. It has no power, and people of conscience have no necessity to obey it. Now, strategically, what do you do if you live in a corrupt society? You got to figure that out. But morally speaking, an unjust law is no law at all. Now, not every evil thing needs to be forbidden. And so you could make a law knowing, or the human society, for its own good and its own stability, or whatever reasons, really, anything that seems reasonable to us, prudent to us. We could put forth some sort of law, and we could cringe and say, but if I allow that, the law, if it's silent, by its silence, I can't be sure someone's not going to do something evil. Right, you make, so for example, there was a time in history when adultery was a crime, a civil crime. And it still is, I believe, in the military. So adultery is what used to be a civil crime. Okay, well, when they took those laws off the books, you couldn't be jailed for, cheating on your spouse. You'd say, well, that allows people to cheat on themselves. Are you legalizing adultery? No, I'm not legalizing adultery. I'm just no longer punishing it by the force of civil law. Just because someone could make bad use of their freedom, that's not on me. Now, if I made a law saying, or a statute or something saying, adultery may no longer be the... adultery may no longer be the grounds for some sort of civil claim, right? So if you've got some sort of custody arrangement or custody battle about the kids or something, if we said, like, look, you may no longer take adultery into account because who cares? It's okay. In fact, we'll reward you. In fact, you at least have custody if you commit adultery. Like, you know, good on you for getting out of a bad situation. It's like, okay, no, now you're promoting evil, and you can't do that. That's maybe a really silly example, but the point is, you cannot forbid good, and you cannot positively permit evil. But the human law can be silent, knowing that higher law exists. But that framework only makes sense if Christ is a literal king, if all authority actually derives from him, and we take his rule seriously, his literal, practical rule of our lives seriously. That he's not just an abstraction. That he's not, oh, well, just God's spirituality is just kind of an idea up to interpretation. Jesus Christ is who he is. He has said what he has said. He has given us the deposit of faith which contains what it contains. And nothing else. We can unpack it more fully, live it more or less perfectly throughout history, but truth does not change, nor is it changeable. It's almost my catchphrase. Because people need to hear it. And of course, there's other ways in which Christ, you know, we can think about Christ being king. But I think the one that we've lost track of is his literal kingship. Literal, practical kingship. I think we're fine with the idea of God out there, where he's got the whole world in his hands, or Jesus Christ, you know, Christus vincit, Christus regnat, Christus imperat. Christ is, Christ is conquered, Christ reigns, Christ is Lord. We're very used to the, in the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, D.C., there's this huge, like 60-foot-high mosaic of Christ the King, with his arms out like this. His hands alone are 5 feet tall each. Huge mosaic. I think it's the biggest mosaic in the Western Hemisphere. It's a huge mosaic. It takes up the entire back of the biggest church in the Western Hemisphere. It's huge. We're very used to that. I think we're less used to, in our day-to-day lives, in our business dealings, in our political activities, in our civil engagements, in our considerations of just any of practical issues of our lives, I think we're a little less used to looking at something and saying, no, I can't do that. Yes, that seems so tempting. This seems like such a good solution. Oh, just this seems, or this seems to be the will of the community. This seems to be what the people want. This seems to be, we believe in democracy, like majority rules. Yes, but if Christ is king, then he has, maybe using the British image, if Christ is king, he has that right of royal assent. He has that veto, and his will is known. And so you engage with something in our civil society, business, civil stuff, political, whatever it is. And you say, well, not everyone's Catholic. Yes, but Christ is everyone's king. Everyone's king. Well, but not everyone acknowledges that. It doesn't matter if everyone acknowledges whether Christ is their king or not. Sure, we're not going to coerce their consciences. I'm not going to forcibly baptize you. But, well, not everyone believes that is not really a reason if we're talking about something that is divine or moral, or divine or natural law, because those come from Christ the King. So if we come up against anything false, permitting evil, forbidding good, we say no. We say no confidently. And when good is being promoted, we say yes, joyfully, knowing that this is furthering the reign of Christ the King. Not in some sort of polemical or way of saying, okay, well, again, kind of coercing people to do things the way we want it, because that's worldly thinking. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something different. What I'm talking about is recognizing that Christ is literally King. That we are subject to Him. That we have all sorts of freedom. We have all sorts of rights always tied with responsibilities. Of course we do. We have all this room in the human society within which He has granted the world to us to decide how we are to conduct ourselves, how we're going to arrange our communities, how many sides the stoplight is going to have, how old your car needs to be before we require that it be installed seatbelts. I don't think there's any cars anymore that don't have seatbelts, but at one time, right, we grandfathered old cars in to not have seatbelts, stuff like that. What the marginal tax rate's going to be. There's no eternal dictate telling us what the tax brackets ought to be. There's all sorts of room for us, so long as we remain within the bounds of the law of Christ the King, which apply not only to Catholics, not only to Christians, but to every human being, because Jesus Christ is not the King of you and I. He is, but He's not only the King of you and I. He is King of the universe and everything in it. Not in an abstract and distant way, but in a direct and literal way.